Welcome to Financial Peace University, Lesson 7, Retirement and College Planning.
Please welcome Dave Ramsey.
Woo! Yeah! Thank you. Thank you. The great motivator Earl Nightingale used to tell the story of a preacher walking along a country lane. And as he came to the top of a rise on this country lane, he looked at the valley below and he saw this beautiful, incredible farm. He was walking on towards the farm, and the closer he got, the more immaculate he realized this farm was. All of the rows of corn were perfect. There was not a weed in the field. The fence rows were clean, the fences were mended, everything was as it should be. And as he approached, he began to see the farmhouse unfold before him. And of course, the lady's garden was the same as the gentleman's field. It was in perfect condition. All the fruits and the vegetables were just hanging on the vines out in the field. The corn was just hanging there. It was an amazing sight. Everything seemed to be in place. It looked like a Norman Rockwell painting. And as the preacher is walking along in the lane in front of this farm, here comes the farmer out to the end of the row. He'd been working there in his corn. Acres and acres and acres of this stuff. The old farmer's, of course, dirty and dusty, and he's been working and tending his field. And the preacher stops and says, "How are you, farmer?" And he says, "Fine, preacher. Thank you for stopping by today." And the preacher backs up and says, "Farmer, the Lord has blessed you with a beautiful farm." And the farmer says, "Yes, sir, he has. And I tell him thank you for that every morning. But you should have seen it when he had it all to himself." I've told you this a couple of times. I love that St. Ambrose quote that says, "Pray like it all depends on God and work like it all depends on you." We live in a cause and effect world. We live in a sowing and reaping world. We play our part in this process. The diligent prosper, the Bible says. There is a process we engage in. And so when we get to things like investing, it's not as simple as saying, "Hey, I need to know the mathematics of investing. I need to understand the laws of IRAs and 401ks. You do need to do those things. If you're going to be a farmer, you need to know what seed to plant. You need to know what fertilizer to use. You need to be an expert at your craft in order to get the yield, in order to get the crop to come in. And you and I are the same. We've got to learn enough about these things in order to prosper. We've got to play our part. And yet we know the blessings come from the Lord. We know the source of it. So we get to play this part between works and faith and how the two are interspersed in our lives when we have a balanced, proper life as a Christ follower. We're in there playing our part and doing our thing. This is the lesson where we discuss retirement and college planning. This is the lesson where we dream. But to start with, we just kind of got our little bases built. We just got back away from the edge of the cliff, and then we cleaned up the mess that we had made. And then we started laying a solid foundation to build a house on, and now I'm going to show you where this is going to take us. We've been talking about living like no one else so that later we can live like no one else. This is the lesson where we show you how to get to live like no one else in a biblical manner. So this is the part where we dream, and you've got to see that light at the end of the tunnel. But if you don't do this work back here, that light at the end of the tunnel is just an oncoming train. You've got to get the mess cleaned up and lay the foundation. We don't start talking about picking out the roof color until we do the framing and until we've laid the foundation. All right, let's look at the great American dream for a minute. Let's take a 30-year-old couple making an average household income. Now, the average household income, according to the Census Bureau right now, is between $48,000 and $50,000 a year. If that couple making $48,000 a year were to save 15% of their household income, that is $7,200 a year, $600 a month. Now, if they were to save $600 a month in a 401k that doesn't match, in some good growth stock mutual funds making 12% growth, at age 70, this 30-year-old couple would have $7 million. Say wow!
Wow!
I mean, what if I'm half wrong?
So the big deal here is do something. Plug in. And you got to understand that this example is of a loser. This is a loser. What? Well, they started out at age 30 at an average household income and for 40 years never got a raise. We saved 15% of $48,000 for 40 years. We never got a raise because if you got a raise, you'd be saving more, right? Because we're saving 15% of our income at this stage. So this is a loser. You start at average and you never get a raise. It's okay to start at average, but never getting a raise is not okay. Somewhere in there, you ought to show up often enough and breathe near the boss to get a raise. Charlie's been here 15 years. Maybe we ought to give him a little bump. He's not leaving, so I guess we're going to have to give him a bump. You know, at least a little bit, right? Now, let's take that same couple and let's say that they qualified for a Roth IRA, which right now, as of this shooting, you could put $5,000 each in. Now, $5,000 each is $10,000 a year. That's $830 a month invested at 12% from age 30 to age 70. Guess what that is? It's $9.8 million. $10 million! You know what you can do if you have $10 million? Anything you want! I mean, what if I'm half wrong? See, that's living like no one else so that later I can live and give like no one else. I mean, think about it. Let's just go crazy while we're at it. What if you did both? You had 17 million. That's just hard to imagine. It's hard to get that in your head. Well, let me tell you what happens. What happens is long before then, you quit worrying about you. Long before then, you even quit worrying about your kids. It's pretty well okay. Long before then, you start realizing these dollars are tools in my hand that God has given me to help other people. And you start seeing this as a mission. You start seeing financial management as a missional experience. I got a buddy of mine that's worth about $20 million, and he sat down in church a while back, and he looked over, he and his wife, and there was a little lady sitting over here, and she's sniffling and crying a little bit before church started. Well, his wife slipped over and put her arm around her and said, "Honey, what's going on? Can I pray with you?" Yeah. I'm sorry to bother you guys. I just was praying here. And, well, what are you praying about? Well, my electricity. I'm behind on my bills. I'm a single mom, and my electricity's going to be cut off on Tuesday. And the wife motions her husband. He comes over. She told him what was going on. He said, "Well, we'll pray for you." And they pray, and they took down her name and her address and everything so that they could follow up with her and make sure she was okay. And he went down Monday and paid the light bill for a year in advance. And she'll never know who did it. Because you know a guy that's worth $20 million doesn't dress in such a way that you know who he is. I just happen to know who he is. She'll never know. It was a miracle. It was a miracle. It was a miracle that someone learned how to handle $20 million in such a way that they knew to pay the light bill a year in advance for a single mom. See, that's what this kind of money is. It's a tool to do things like that with. And guess what? If you're trying to pay your light bill, that never occurs to you. So we've got to get ourselves to this point so that you can have these kinds of thoughts running through your head. You take your eyes off of you, you take your eyes off your kids long before you get to $17 million. The baby steps work. If you work them in the order we're talking about, you're going to see the results. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of hard work, but it works. The diligent prosper. The Bible says, "Hope deferred makes the heart sick, but when desire comes, it is a tree of life." Now, how do we get to where we can save $600? Well, we've got to do the dumping debt lesson. We've got to get rid of the debt. How do we get to where we can save $600? Well, we've got to do the cash flow planning lesson where we're doing the budget together, which is the relating with money lesson. And we're on paper, on purpose. Every dollar has an assignment. Suddenly, you will start finding money that used to go to the bank and can now go to you because you've gotten control of your most powerful wealth-building tool, which is your income. Now, once the emergency fund is in place, you need to begin retirement and college funding, which all fall under this heading of long-term investing for wealth. Now, let's walk back through the baby steps again. Baby step one is, we're going to do that before we do anything. No other side deals. We get that done first. The second thing we're going to do is we're going to use the The debt snowball. We're going to list our debts smallest to largest, pay them off in that order with gazelle intensity. Once all of our debts are gone except our home, then baby step three is?
3 to 6 months
of expenses set aside for emergencies. Now, we're sitting there pretty cool right then because we got $10,000 or $15,000, $20,000 sitting there in cash just for emergencies. We don't have any payments but a house payment. Now it's time to go on the offensive. Now it's time to go out here and plow the field and really start to bring some crops in. And that's where we are. Baby step four. Baby step four is invest 15% of your household income into Roth IRAs and or pre-tax retirement plans. Now I didn't say 28%. Some of you have been in a hurry. I want to save all I can. I'm a big saver. Hold it down to 15 because I've got some other stuff to do with this money in a little while. We've still got to do college, and we still got to get the house paid off. So I want to hold it to 15 for now. Later, you can come back and max it out. But I didn't say 8%, and, well, Dave, my company and all the... Listen, don't try to get out of this. What's the least I can do and still be wildly rich? You know, what wrong question, you know? What wrong question? You're going to have to plow the field. You got to buckle the horses in and get out. You know, it's got to be done. The more you save, the more you're going to have. This is how it works, right? So 15% is where we're going for right here. And here's the weird thing. At almost any income, if you save 15% over an extended period of time, you will retire with dignity, even if you don't get a raise. Take a $25,000 a year person, put the 15% number in there, and do that from age 30 to age 70. It's not millions and millions, but it's plenty to live on. They're going to be okay. So the numbers work there. And, of course, the big numbers, you start putting 15% of those away, well, it's big numbers, right? So it works. We've worked this for years. This is not our first ride on this cabbage truck. This stuff is proven out in actual mechanical practice. We know what we're doing. Now, the thing is this. We're going to go through all the technical stuff about 401ks and Roth IRAs, and I can guarantee you one thing. As soon as I finish shooting this, the government will change the laws. So check our website pretty regularly. We keep all the up-to-date stuff on there. So if you hear something in here that doesn't sound quite right or whatever, it's been changed, it might have been changed. Just go to DaveRamsey.com, go to Financial Peace, get on the website, look at the stuff. It's all in there. We keep up to date on everything. So we're going to keep you cutting edge material there. Everything is available. And I have a network of people that I endorse for investing across the whole nation. We call them endorsed local, because they're local in your area, providers. ELPs for short. And they have to have the heart of a teacher or I won't endorse them. Not the heart of a salesman. And they have to have, they have to agree to do investing the way I teach. So I don't send them over there and then you get different advice than what you've heard here or what you've read in one of my books or something like that. There has to be this integrity, this consistency. So you can get with them, you can get online, get up-to-date information, actually start doing the things that we're talking about in this lesson. What's scary is that 42% of American workers have never tried to calculate their retirement. That last year, the average American spent more time in that year watching reality television than they spent in the previous 10 years working on their retirement plan. Now, here's the weird thing. The average millionaire can't tell you who got thrown off the island, who can't dance, who got the rose. We're not sure just who the biggest loser is in this case, are we? Yeah, it could be us, those of us that get glued to our tube. And we could be end up being the biggest losers in this case. So, you know, you don't want to spend more time on reality television, which, by the way, hint, is not reality. Shocking. And you don't want to spend more time on that than you spend on your actual life and on your future. You spend your time on stuff that actually matters. 70% of workers say they are not where they need to be with their retirement savings. 29% of Americans have less than $1,000 saved. And their plan, I guess, is, well, when I get old, the government, which is well known for its ability to handle money, will take care of me. Not a good plan. So I use the KISS rule of investing in my life. The keep it simple, stupid rule of investing. Now, it doesn't mean that somebody is simple and it doesn't mean they're stupid. Some of the most profound things I've ever seen in my life are simple. As a matter of fact, normatively speaking, across the wealthy people that I've worked with over the years, their plans are unbelievably simple. I always heard, you know, that the wealthy people had all these special kinds of trusts or partnerships or sophisticated investments and all these different weird things and all these little things they were doing, and that's how they became wealthy. The secrets of the rich. Let me tell you what the secrets of the rich are. They're not a secret. That's the secrets of the rich. It's obvious and it's right in front of us. So keep it simple. It doesn't mean you're stupid. Don't put money in things you don't understand, ever. Well, Dave, it's difficult to understand. My guy says stuff like, how about well-diversified portfolio? Sometimes we use $20 words to describe a $3 concept in the financial world so we can charge you a commission. Diversification, for instance. Diversification simply means to spread around. So when you don't put all of your money in one place, diversification lowers risk. See, if you put all your money in your company stock with your 401k, now you got your income and your job coming from that company, and you've bet your future on that one company. If this one company goes down, you're roadkill. You're gone. So you don't buy company stock with your 401k. You diversify. You put it anywhere but that, any other company, any other place. For goodness sakes. Now, I'll show you some things to do with it. But, and you know, these people who get out there and they put all their money in one stock, in one company, that company goes bye-bye, they go bye-bye with it. So you have to spread it around. So here's the thing to remember. Money is like manure. Left in one pile, it stinks. Spread around, it will grow things. By the way, diversification is in the Bible. Wow. Ecclesiastes says, give portions to seven, yes to eight, for you do not know what disaster may come upon the land or what character we elect as the next president. Scary. Scary out there. And so we don't know what's going to happen. Spread your portions to seven, yes to eight, for you do not know what disaster may come upon the land. And when you have your money spread out and you don't have any debt and you've got an emergency fund and wild times come in the economy, you feel like a spectator instead of a participant in the storm. It sets you up in a completely different way. Mutual funds are where investors pool their money to invest. Professional portfolio managers manage the pool or the fund, and your return comes as the value of the fund is increased. What in the world did he just say? Let's try this. I'm going to make this a mutual fund. I'm going to be the mutual fund manager because I'm the guy up here with the props. So we're going to open a mutual fund, and I'm going to let some of you on the front row invest in the mutual fund. When I call out to you, you're going to be an investor. I need to hear your first name. Second in. Yes, ma'am. Wanda is going to put some money in our fund. Your name, sir?
Tony.
Tony is going to put some money in our fund. Your name, sir?
Dominic.
Dominic is going to put some money in our fund. Your name, sir?
Arnie.
Arnie is going to put some money in our mutual fund. Your name, ma'am?
Sally.
Sally is going to put some money in our mutual fund. Your name, ma'am?
Christine
is going to put some money in our mutual fund. Your name, ma'am? Carrie is going to put some money in our mutual fund. Your name, sir?
John
is going to put some money in our mutual fund. Now, what just happened? These people just mutually funded this. It's a
mutual fund.
This is hard, isn't it? That's what a mutual fund is. They went together and invested in something mutually into a fund. Now, they're on the front row. They're smart people. So they would never put money in a mutual fund unless they knew what the manager was doing with it, unless they had looked at his track record, his character, his experience, how he had done over the last several years with this mutual fund. Now, and then what we buy with this money in this mutual fund, what the managers of the fund buy with it, tells us what kind of fund it is. If we were to buy bonds with this money, then we would call this a bond mutual fund. In the industry, we would shorten that and just call it a bond fund. Have you ever heard of that? Say yes.
Yes.
Okay. If I bought stock with this money, and I bought stock in companies that make things like Dove soap or Country Crock butter or Q-tips or Slim Fast or Lipton tea or Ben and Jerry's or all detergent, I would be buying stock in a foreign overseas company. Those products are certainly all consumed stateside. Many of those products are made stateside with factories here in the U.S., but the companies are not U.S. companies. They are foreign or overseas companies. Nothing wrong with that, but I'm just explaining to you how it works. So if I were to buy stock in international companies rather than U.S. companies, then we might call this an international stock. You're getting it. Now, if I were to buy stock in companies that are growing, maybe we bought stock in AT&T, maybe we bought stock in FedEx, maybe we bought stock in Home Depot, maybe we bought stock in Walmart, or maybe we bought stock in Microsoft, maybe we bought stock in Kmart, maybe not, and we bought stock in growing companies, then this would be called a growth stock mutual fund. That's what it is. They mutually funded it. We bought a group of 90 to 200 different companies that are growing, and your return comes as the value of the fund is increased. Not a percentage rate return. It's not an interest rate. It's the Home Depot stock in here went up, and one of the other stocks went down, and three of the others went up, and as a group, the group went up. And so you put $1,000 in here for your kids' college, and now your portion of this pie is now worth $3,000 because the value of the pie went up over time. And that's what mutual funds are, and that's how they work. Now, mutual funds are long-term investments. They're long-term investments. You never put money in a mutual fund for a short term. And let me define long term: at least 5 years. You're going to leave the money alone at least 5 years. You stand a really good chance of getting less out of there than you put in if you don't leave it alone at least 5 years, because they go up and down, don't they? Sometimes they're going way up and it's on the news, not so much, and they're going way down and it's always on the news. I mean, if it bleeds, it leads, right? We know it's going to be on the front page of the newspaper if it's crashing. You know, back in that 2008 debacle when everything went crazy and it's shooting down, I'm doing all this media and I'm standing on there. I'm the one guy, the crazy preacher on the corner going, don't cash out your stuff. Don't cash out your 401k. I know your 401k looks like a 201k. Remain calm. Because the only people that get hurt on a roller coaster are those that jump off. Ride the roller coaster out, because it's over time. They're good long-term investments. Now, I personally invest my 401k and have invested my kids' college funds, and I've recommended for 20 years the same exact mix on how to do that. I've recommended you spread out your investments across four types. So inside your 401k, inside your Roth IRA, inside your kids' college, or just investing in general, we're going to diversify by being in 90 to 200 different stocks in the mutual fund, but then we're going to be in different kinds of mutual funds. So we diversified our diversification. We're going to put 25% in growth and income funds. We're going to put 25% in growth funds. We're going to put 25% in international funds. And we're going to put 25% in aggressive growth stock mutual funds, which is the wild child of the bunch. You know, the growth and income is the obedient, predictable child. The aggressive growth is all over the place. It's up. I had one of them that was up 110% 1 year. Back in the 90s with the tech bubble, anybody remember that? The next year I lost 56% on it. So it's right back where it started, basically. But it's all over the place. But it had averaged over a long period of time about 20%. But it was a wild ride to get there. And it's been crazy through the 2000s as well. So the deal is this: you got to have a little mix here. You got the calm one, you got the wild child, you got the one in the middle, and you've got the exchange student, right? So we've kind of got a mix here in the family, and there's something always to be a little scared about in there, because if things are going up, that growth and income looks boring. If things are going down, you're real glad you got it. And so you want to be just very, very, very spread out, very diversified. Now, when you're doing your investing, we always save long-term with tax-favored dollars. Now, we used to say pre-tax dollars, but then the Roth IRA came along, and of course, that's tax-free. Say free.
Free.
That's a good word. I like that word. Free is a good word when associated with the government. It's a good thing. So free, free, free. Now, so now we've got tax-free and we've got pre-tax, so we just call it tax-favored. Tax-favored means that the investment is in a qualified plan. And one of those plans will sound something like an individual retirement arrangement, an IRA. Now, marketing with banks has been done so much that you thought that was an individual retirement account. The law calls it an individual retirement arrangement, an IRA. Now, everybody knows what an IRA is. There's a 401k, a 403b, a 457. There are SEPs. There's a little bit of everything. And what's interesting about this is people just say, I've got a 401k. Here's what this is. What does 401k stand for? It is the regulation in the IRS code that allows us to have this account. It's section 401, subsection K. With a 403B, it's section 403, subsection B. You go into the code and actually read it. That's how you'll find it in there. And the 401K is a typical corporate savings plan. A 403B is for nonprofits and hospitals and teachers and that kind of stuff. And that's where you'll see that. 457 is deferred comp. You're just putting off your compensation until later. And so that's how these things work out. The bottom line is this. We get confused and we say, well, I invested in an IRA. I invested in a 401K. Not really. A 401k is how your investment was treated. Basically, the investment is the cookie jar. This is the money. It could be a mutual fund. It could be an account at the bank. It could be all kinds of different things. This is money. And if you just set money out there in the cold, the government wants a piece of it. If instead you want to keep it warm, you put a little coat over it called an IRA. Or you put a little coat over it called a 401k to keep it warm. But the coat is the 401k. That just means it's got covering so that the taxes don't get to it. But under here is the meat. This is the money. This is a mutual fund, for instance. And a mutual fund you can have with or without an IRA. If you qualify it as an IRA or you use a mutual fund in your 401k, now we put a coat over it and we're keeping it warm from taxes. We're keeping the taxes off of it. So that's how we've got to remember to look at this. Now let's look at IRAs for a second. Remember, the IRA is not a type of an investment at a bank. As a matter of fact, I don't recommend you buy your IRA at a bank. I don't want a bank IRA because I don't want bank interest rates. Awful, right? Instead, it's the tax treatment on virtually any type of investment that you do as an individual retirement arrangement. It's the coat over the cookie jar. Everyone with an earned income is eligible for an IRA. Now, everyone doesn't have an earned income. If you're on disability, you're not eligible. If you get only Social Security or pension, you're not eligible. If you're living off of investments, you're not eligible. You have to have wages or own a business and have an earned income in order to have an IRA. You can't do an IRA that way. And so you can't start an IRA on your children unless they have an earned income. However, I did have a buddy in the investment business one time that had a client came in. The baby was in a diaper commercial. The baby got paid big bucks for the diaper commercial. So they filed a tax return on the baby and did an IRA on the baby that year. But unless you're sending your kids to the salt mines, you're really not going to be able to do IRAs on them. They have to have an earned income, and you have to file a tax return for them to qualify on that. The one exception for this is non-income producing spouses. If, for instance, my wife is a stay-at-home mom, if we qualified for it income-wise, we don't, but if we qualified for an IRA, I can do $5,000 on me and $5,000 on a non-income producing spouse. That's the one exception. That's the one person that doesn't have an earned income that can have an IRA. Now, the Roth IRA came along a few years ago because Senator William Roth, God rest his soul, I love the man. Oh, thank you. The Taxpayer Relief Act of 1997 put the Roth IRA in place. Now, the Roth IRA is an after-tax IRA that grows tax-free. Say free.
Free.
And if you save like we teach, you're going to have enough money that the Roth IRA is your best route to go. If you get out of debt and you start saving 15% of your income, almost every one of you will have enough money that the Roth IRA is mathematically going to be the way to go. It's definitely the way to go. And Roth, that little four-letter word, is a multi-million dollar word. Let's say you did your savings and you built it up in a 401k. Well, you know as you pull the money out of the 401k that everything that's in there is taxable. Let's say you had $4 million in there. By the time you get that $4 million out, you're going to give at least $1 million of it to the government in taxes, aren't you? Say yes.
Yes.
But if it's $4 million in a Roth IRA, it's tax
free.
So that word made you $1 million. It's worth $250,000 a letter. Wow. Now, the 401Ks, the 403Bs, the 457 plans, most companies have completely done away with the traditional pension plans. They rely almost exclusively now on a 401K type of a plan or a 403B or something like that. They're not providing company-provided pensions hardly anywhere anymore. That's a dinosaur. It's almost gone. Now, the 401K is great, though. I love it because the upside of a 401K is you own it. See, if a company provides you a pension and the company goes broke, they lost your pension, too. It's an asset of the company. The money's gone. But with the 401K, it's yours. It's in your name. It's your money you put in. Even if they match, it's yours. You're vested, it's yours. And if they go broke, you're fine. You're fine. I talked to a lady this week on my radio show that the company she was working for had gone broke and she wanted to know what to do with her 401K. That's a good question to ask. That's a good thing to know that you got to keep your retirement even though you lost your job. Because that's awesome. That's the good side of the 401K. The bad side of the 401K is if you put in nothing, how much is going to be in there?
Nothing.
Yow. So you got to use this tool or it's not going to be of any value to you at all. Now, some companies are now offering the Roth 401K, which your portion that you put in is after tax and grows tax.
Free.
I'm loving this word. Now, the match, if your company matches, cannot be in Roth form. It'll be traditional, and it'll be pre-tax and taxable on the match portion. So you'll kind of have two things running in your 401k at the same time. But I offer a Roth at my company. I personally do a Roth 401k at my company. We have both traditional and Roth. All of our people do the Roth just about. I mean, it's very simple because it's going to grow tax-free. You just can't beat this. Now, you should be funding your plan whether your company matches or not. But the plans that have that company match provide great returns. Because here's what we're talking about. If you have $1,000 of income and you bring it home, by the time it gets home, it looks suspiciously like $700. Take home pay. But if you put the $1,000 in income pre-tax into your 401k, that $300 that would have gone to Congress is being used to grow you money. So in a sense, you're using the government's money to grow you some money by doing it pre-tax. So it's kind of a secret government formula to wealth, ha, 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 right? But now this is really important. Think about this. Let's go back to our Great American Dream example. You remember that 30-year-old couple had a non-matching 401k, put in $600 a month, $7,200 a year. They did that from age 30 to age 70, had $7.4 million. Y'all remember that a while ago? Say yes.
Yes.
Here's what's interesting. 30 to 70 is 40 years. They put in $7,800 for 40 years. That's $288,000. They have $7.4 million in the account, $288,000 of it they put in. The rest of that is growth. That's amazing. What that tells me is every one of those little $288,000 is a rabbit. It's making other dollars. So every one of these I don't send to Washington and I can put up here in that 288 makes me a bunch of others. So it's very, very important to do tax-favored stuff, whether it's tax-free or pre-tax.